Welcome back to Sports Byline. Rick Tittle with you. And we're waiting on the guest that got moved an hour. And it looks like we might have him here. Coming up in the next segment, we will talk Stanley Cup playoffs with Bruce Marshall from Vegas Insider, as we like to do. But we're quite happy to be joined now by filmmaker Thomas Percy Kim. He has a new film entitled Isle Child. That's I-S-L-E, Isle Child. It is making its world premiere at the San Francisco International Film Festival. And this will be on Friday at 8:30 p.m. down here at the Marina Theater. First of all, Thomas, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about the plot of Isle Child, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is Rick, right?
This is Rick, yes.
Nice to meet you, Rick. Well, thanks for having me, and would love to share a little more information about the film. So this film is a coming-of-age story about a Korean-American adoptee who finds a letter from his birth mother saying that she wants to see him because she's terminally ill. And so this kind of throws a wrench in his whole identity that he's built up as an American. And the film is just explores what it means to define yourself, like what identity means, what family means, and what home and blood really means.
Forgive me if I miss this by a mile, but I see the surname Kim. Are you also Korean American? Is there something personal about this story for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Concord, Massachusetts, and growing up there, I didn't really see many other Asian Americans. So this story is birthed from a very personal experience between me and another Korean American adoptee, whose name was C, who's like the real character in the movie. And we never really got along throughout middle school, high school, because we were the two kind of like token Asians, right? Like we didn't want to associate with each other because we were afraid of being seen as Asian, as being seen as different. And so this story is really just a love letter to our relationship, our friendship that eventually blossomed. When I reached out to him in junior year of high school, I was like trying to figure out what to write next for my next film. And at the time, films like Moonlight were coming out, and I was thinking about my own identity. And I felt like, what would be best, to figure out more about myself than to talk to this guy who is also Korean American. Of course there are differences. He was adopted. I was not. My parents came from Korea, I was very lucky to, immigrate here and live life here. So I could always go back home, and I could always embrace my Korean heritage if I wanted to. But for an adoptee, he would never have that experience. He is, by all definition, American, except for the way he looks. And so, yes, there was a very personal aspect to this film, which was my friendship with the real C.
It's interesting because just yesterday I was talking about Concord, Mass, because of the anniversary of the shot heard around the world. And about a year and a half ago, I took the train from Boston out there, and I actually walked from the train station all the way to that bridge. And I'm from California, and there's a lot of patriotic places, but I just think about growing up in a place with a heritage of being an immigrant, and maybe you could argue the most patriotic town in America, huh?
Yeah, well, that's crazy to hear that, because people who know about Concord really know about Concord. Walden, Thoreau, Emerson, all these very important figures, they all birthed from Concord. And you're right, the Battle of Lexington and Concord, which is very timely today, knowing about Paul Revere and how he spoke out loud, he used his words to fight for what was right. And I feel like it's incredibly timely today. And you're right, it's really like, it feels like the birthplace of America in some ways, because that's kind of where the Revolutionary War started. And, it felt like a very, I didn't know it at the time because I was just living there. I just thought it was just like any other town, right? Of course, they talk about all these historical figures, but it never really clicks until you realize, oh, people outside of Massachusetts know about this place, and, there's a real historical importance to this. And that just went over my head when I was growing up there. But when I explored the story and learned more about like actually paid attention in English class. I was like, wow, this is so interesting. There's so much history and just so much, so many interesting stories and depth here. You know, it's a great location.
I'll throw this in too. When I went to the train station to go back, I had to wait about a half hour. And so I went into Sorrento's Pizzeria and I ordered a sandwich, and I thought it was kind of a kitschy looking place. And so I brought up my phone to take a picture, and like three guys ducked and went, whoa, 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 what are you doing? What are you doing? And I thought, is everyone in witness relocation? And it's like they panicked when I was about to take a picture. Did you ever hang out at Sorrento's Pizzeria?
Yeah, I mean, I went there like every other day, literally every week. I would hang out there with my friends. That's so crazy to hear. We filmed right across the street at New London Pizza, which is like their biggest competitor. You know, there's like the two pizza places in Concord. So we filmed in the other one. But yeah, Sorrento's is the best.
One other
weird,
thing.
Though. I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know why they made you stop photographing.
The other thing is when I was walking back from the bridge to the train station, and I went kind of in that little center where there's a church and the famous pub where everyone met, and I brought this up yesterday, there was a little Union Jack and in the ground, and right by the road a British soldier during the retreat fell and died, and they you know, were retreating, and so they just left him there, and so the people of Concord buried him. And I thought, why would I see a Union Jack in Concord? And it was just a little, it was a very human moment just to say, we're honoring you with your flag of your country right where you were buried. Have you ever seen that?
I am not sure if I remember that, but I'm sure I've passed by it many times. You know, it's actually the 250th anniversary of the Battle of Lexington Concord yesterday, or mm-hmm. no, a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents were sending me pictures about, like, all of these whole day of events in town, and like there was like a drone show and all these things, and so yeah, it's a very historical place. I haven't seen that place we're talking about though.
So for this film now, as you've taken it around and it's been well received, do you sort of like, do people want to like capitalize on a sequel? Like, how does that work, you know, or do you have an agent who says, you know, now we're going to do something on this, and maybe get pigeonholed to say, these are the kind of films you're going to make, and you're like, well, not so much. How does that all work for your career now?
Yeah, well, it's gotten ever more competitive in the to break into the feature filmmaking world. You know, back in the old day when, like, Paul Thomas Anderson was coming up, you know, you can make a really great short film, take it around to all these festivals, get, you know, drum up interest and be given an opportunity to make your first feature film. And those days are long gone. You know, it's just so competitive. I think filmmaking has been democratized so much with the advent of DSLR cameras that, you know, anyone can make a movie. And so there's been like a huge shift towards independent filmmaking, for better or for worse, because there's more independent films now than ever, but for worse, because it's harder to break in than ever because there are so many people. And so with this film was completely outside of the system, like the Hollywood system. I mean, we raised, you know, over $1 million through crowdfund equity, so crowdfund, without going through like a traditional production company or a studio. And, you know, so this, if it was a studio film, then of course, If it does well with the box office and the numbers, then the studio might consider a sequel, or, you know, consider some other, you know, licensing the IP for merch or, you know, whatnot. But because this is an independent film, it just kind of ends with us, right? Like, this is a calling card for me. This is a calling card for my producers and the rest of our team. This is a show that, like, we can make something at, like, the, like, 1.2, 1.6 level. And we can, you know, hopefully jump from here to like a 3 to 5 or 5 to $10 million project. That's the goal, you know, just constantly making stuff. I mean, you know, we're not being paid, we're not in the corporate world, and we're not being paid like an annual salary. So the goal is to just continue working, you know, and find new work, especially these days with Hollywood being so dead and so down.
Very cool. Once again, Isle Child, a film by my guest, Thomas Percy Kim, an official selection of the San Francisco International Film Festival, making its world premiere this Friday at 8:30 p.m. at the Marina Theater. He will be there, cast members Ethan Hwang and Samantha Mathis, and others as well. Thomas, congratulations on the film. Have a great time at the fest, and let's catch up on your next one.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Would love to talk again.